Certainly, Dr. Craig Manning will be looking forward to that as he continues to work with BYU athletes up and down the spectrum. Certainly, football players benefit from Dr. Manning's insights, a professor of sports psychology at Brigham Young University, but first and foremost, a mental strength coach to champions, Olympians, NBA franchises, teams, Cougars. Dr. Manning, welcome to the Morning Drive with TK.
Thanks, Tom. How you doing, mate?
Good. Good. It's been quite a week. And before I hit you with the national team and what happened in the first 4 minutes mentally and watching Leo Messi take over, I just wanted to kind of get your exclamation point, your period exclamation point on the Cavaliers' resounding, historic, come-from-behind win to take the NBA title. And just kind of what jumped out. To me, one of the plays, LeBron's block is iconic. But after Kyrie hits the step-back three, all of a sudden Kevin Love is isolated on Steph Curry in no man's land for a big guy. That's a nightmare. Maybe Love knew Steph wanted to hit the home run ball. In retrospect, Steph said, yeah, he probably should have just maybe taken the two, and 40 seconds to go, you're only down one. But as it developed, Kevin Love, who's been knocked for lack of defensive intensity and positioning, he had the defensive possession of his career and really spoke to the way he played that. He was one of the unsung heroes in that game. Clearly, LeBron and Kyrie are the leaders, but 14 points, 9 boards, and we're really without a role. They kind of threw him out there. The coaching staff, I felt, throughout the series and the playoffs and the season, really never really knew how to use him, but he kind of... to me, was, again, one of the unsung heroes in an absolutely crazy three-game sweep of what we all thought was, the best team in many, many years.
Yeah, he had a rough go during that series after he played well in the first game, then had the concussion, and the media, was kind of on him a lot. But I thought he did a good job because he was playing some good defense and letting Kyrie and LeBron do their thing. But for him to play the way he did in that final game in the clutch was pretty impressive. And I was interesting to see how he had that moment right at the end where he could not redeem himself. That's the wrong word. But he had his chance to be able to put his mark and contribute, but not in a three-pointer in the corner or, one of the traditional ways of his style. He was put in a situation where most would say he's probably going to get beat with the best three-point shooter in the world, really. And it was interesting. I thought it was good. Steph went after him, and then he passed the ball away, and then he wanted it back, and he went after him again. And Kevin Love just stayed right on him and made a big play there. I thought that was really, really good from a psychological standpoint for him to play that well after kind of the situation he'd been in was pretty impressive from my perspective.
I agree. And what impressed me was the guy had to subjugate his ego and his willpower for not only the season, but certainly as the playoffs come and you're playing in June where everybody's watching and everybody's questioning him. And he knows he's not really in the best position for him, but he became a team guy right in front of everybody's eyes. And, I think that really speaks volumes to the character of the guy. And, certainly LeBron does on a daily, nightly basis is preposterous. And Kyrie with the, maybe the shot of the series with the step back three. But I thought that maybe Love embodied sort of what the Cavs brought in the last three games, just, trying to find a way somehow, and maybe not even directly in his skill set.
It's interesting, though. It seems like the superstars all have something like that mm-hmm. leaves an imprint on us. LeBron had that. For me, the big imprint was those blocks on Steph, which I know it's just a block and it's just 2 points in that moment, but psychologically the impact that has on Steph, the impact it has, therefore, on the Warriors when your superstar is getting shut down by the superstar your opposing team. And then when LeBron does it, the psychological impact it has, not just on him, but everyone else on the Cavs, I just think that was a very critical moment with that. His statement with the block and him kind of staring him down.
Yeah, I want to ask you about that. Let me just interrupt briefly. From what you would be talking to people about, I know you're not professing, you don't want to get up and woof in a guy's face, but that was something that was un-LeBron-like, and to me that indicated at some level he thought they were going to win, because I haven't seen him do that in other situations when they, things weren't going well. I thought it was sort of his way of saying, we got you.
you know, I was, even if you, if we took that even to Messi, and I would even suggest with the Jazz a little bit, I feel like every team needs to have somebody that has that, I don't know what you want to call it, maybe the dog in them a little bit. Mm-hmm. They have that mentality. They're not bad guys. They're not mean guys, but they have this determination that in the moment, we're here to win, and I'm not backing down to anyone. We are here to win. And LeBron made that psychological statement with that block and how he stared him down. I was watching the game with my son at the time, and I turned to my son. I'm like, whoa, that was a little nasty right there. And that little bit of nastiness sends a message to everyone that, you know, this is ours. I mean, it just spreads. And I see it through my lens. I don't know if everyone else looks at it through that perspective, but that mindset just was continually moving towards the Cavaliers' favor as the game was going on. And that was a huge statement. And then Kyrie hits the step back. That's what, you know, big-time players do. And then Kevin has his moment, not hitting a three-pointer in the corner, not a big offensive rebound, his biggest core competency, but a great defensive play. And it, those are the three lingering thoughts that are embedded in my mind that I'll probably remember forever.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, everybody's talking the big buzz here. The Jazz go get George Hill. To me, he's a consummate winner, one of Greg Popovich's favorite NBA guys. You know, he brought Kawhi Leonard to the Spurs in that deal. He comes here, veteran. You know, the money makes sense. He's got a year to prove himself, and maybe, you know, maybe they tie him up long-term and takes pressure off Dante. What are your just sort of some of your thoughts from your perspective on where they sit now with sort of house money for the rest of the draft night?
You know, I think it's a good move because obviously, again, so I'm just going to talk about from my perspective,
sure,
psychologically, bringing in another young guy. You got Trey Lyles from last year. He's a great pickup, but you bring in another guy that it looks like with the depth of this draft, you're not going to pick up somebody with as talent as Lyles. And so you got somebody that's going to, you know, take up more time and you need more time to develop them. And that's where I was thinking. They got so many young guys, and being what I've coached my whole life, it takes a long time to develop guys, you know, physically, but also mm-hmm. psychologically. And we just don't need that right now. We got enough guys. We need somebody that's going to step in and bring a mentality to accelerate this a little bit. And I feel like we need, just like we're saying with what LeBron did with that block, the Jazz need somebody that's, I don't know how we say it, Tom, a little mean, a little nasty.
Got a little nasty in him.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like the Jazz again, and I love Gobert, and I thought Gobert was going to take that role this year, and I felt like he kind of faded a little bit psychologically in that role. I feel like we need somebody that has a mentality of, we got this, we're doing it this year, right? We've done enough rebuilding, we've done enough development, this is our year this year, and have that mentality and not be such nice guys. You know, I love them because they're all nice guys, but we need to have a mentality of, no, we're not backing down this year. We're winning close games. We're making the last second shot in games this year. We have to have that mentality. And I'm so biased around the mindset because I see it all the time, but I think the Jazz just need the right mindset. Mm-hmm. I don't think they need another guy. I think they need the right mindset. And I think Hill brings a mindset that is helping them to go that way. I still don't know if that's quite enough. I'd love to see Gordon step up. I'm wondering what Dante brings because he has a little bit of that, I'm dang good, and I can do this. And I wouldn't be surprised that Dante wins that starting role because I think he has that little bit of nastiness under the surface there, and we'll see what happens. But again, I feel like it's the same thing as Messi. He has that as well. I think Derrick Rose has it. I would take Derrick Rose in a heartbeat. I think he has that mindset as well.
Yeah, no doubt. I just want our quick thought about Dante Exum and his development. What does it mean in a scenario where you want guys to play free of mental clutter? You talk about that a lot, the noise, and now they've removed the pressure, whether it's applied or real or just something that is assumed or something that Dante just accepts. He doesn't have to be the starting point guard or the leader. You know, he has a chance to exhale and learn from George Hill. I like the idea. Mark Spears from ESPN was on with our guys yesterday. Put his locker right next to George Hill's.
Yeah, love it. Yeah, I think he's got to learn all the little intangibles, all the little things, the nuances, how you handle after games, how you handle yourself in practice, all those little things. And I thought that was great when he said that, put him right next to him. And I think he... like everyone is saying, you know, Hill will probably start here, and rightly so, and Dante will get a chance to learn from him. But even when or if Dante takes over the starting role, I still think it's good for him because on a bad night, you can put Hill in and give Hill more minutes, and Dante doesn't have to be the man every moment of the 40 minutes. It gives him room to be able to play, like you said, that just to be free to really play. And if he's making a few mistakes, pull him out and put the vet guy in. You know, yeah. He doesn't have to play with perfection, and that's a problem when you have to be perfect because there really isn't other options. You're playing with a little bit of fear. So now he'll be able to play very free, and it'll be fun to see what can happen there.
And I thought I had at the beginning of the show, you play them together, which, you know, combo, you can play either one at point, the other can play two. I imagine, you know, Hill might be more comfortable at the two, but that's a formidable defensive backcourt when they play together. And again, it's the same idea. Dante can defer on the court, but be on the court.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
Psychologically, I love it. It just helps him to be himself and not have to, again, so if I'm really breaking it down, he's able to be himself and focus on what he's doing, which is two-dimensional thinking. Whereas when you're trying to be the leader as well, that's three-dimensional. And what I noticed 2 years ago is he's trying to, as soon as he tried to take on that role of leadership as well, it throws off his own skill sets, and he wasn't making any shots then because he doesn't have that muscle memory all the way down. And so he needs to be able to have time to get his game down, his stroke down, and be able to do that in a live games, which is two-dimensional thinking, and get that muscle memory before he steps over into that three-dimensional thinking where he's also able to tell everyone else what to do, which is just, it's a progression. It just takes time. It just takes maturity to develop that.
I love it. Quickly, just wanted you to maybe comment on, you know, what happens to a team with all the buildup, and they had a remarkable run here through the Copa America Centenario. The USA team gets to the semis against the best team in the world. They're up against it. Three quality starters not available. The coach wants them to step on Argentina's toes and be, you know, maybe not respect as much. They get a goal in the fourth minute, and then Messi takes over and is Messi. And all of a sudden, I don't think the U.S. was not into it. They played hard. They didn't quit, but, man, they looked completely outclassed. What happened mentally, do you think? I mean, was it just too much to overcome, even though they're on their home soil? Did we lose them? Okay, drop the call. If we can dial them back up, we'll get a quick thought from Dr. Manning and say goodbye. I'll let you work through that. But, I mean, that was just kind of the thought I had. I just, you know, when you watched with all the momentum building and the USA out there against this monstrously talented number one team in the world with Messi, and, you know, you want to get you're into the teeth of the match, and you want to be into the 15th, 20th, 30th minute scoreless. And, you know, if you get one at that point, then you have them maybe a little bit on their heels and maybe a little bit of panic. I don't know. But being on USA soil with the crowd, even though there were a lot of Argentinian fans there. Okay, Craig Manning, you're back with us. Sorry about that. Just your thoughts about maybe mentally, you know, how important that first goal was, and then Messi just, you know, took over and was magical. But it just seemed like, even though they're on their home pitch with the crowd, and it just, everything seemed to go away. Even though they kept playing hard, they didn't quit.
Yeah, you see this, don't you? You know, the one of the better teams in the world, and we're trying to get there, and we have a lot of toughness. Yeah, we like to here in the U.S. We have so much talent. We like to think that we can compete with anyone, you know, and we go in with that mentality, which I think is the right mentality, and we have some expectations of maybe having a, you know, I don't even know if an upset, but, you know, pushing them really hard is what I was getting from what the coach was communicating, and then they come in and things turn around pretty quick, and Messi just goes off on it, and it happens sometimes, you know, they're just really good, and sometimes you think you're getting closer and you're closing that gap, and then, you know, kind of the best in the world kind of show you sometimes that you're still not there. And I just think it's, again, I think you can get tentative pretty quick, especially when there's still some lingering doubts.
Yeah.
What I would say in that situation is, you know, they're working hard. The U.S. are doing the right things. They're getting close, but the depth of the belief in themselves isn't there yet. It's not enough. I think it's very similar to the Jazz. They're doing the right things. They're close. But the depth of that self-belief and the depth of the confidence isn't deep enough. And when you're put in that situation, sometimes it's going to crack and you're going to see that you still got some work to do. And they're doing all the right things. We just got to get it deeper and more ingrained. And Messi is, wow, I've been impressed by him, even though I'm not an expert in soccer, but he really, he knows his core competency. He knows his strengths. And he has worked on, he's known that for years, and he's developed all these skills around his core competency, and that's why he's the best in the world. He's phenomenal.
I love that last goal. It could have been his, but he saw his teammate set him up. Didn't matter to him. To him, it was about celebrating and getting number four, getting the fourth goal. He didn't care if he got it or his teammate did. And to me, when you're a superstar and you have that level of leadership, you know, that's a really hard team to beat.
Yeah, big time. It's just interesting, you know. I was working with a guy the other day, and as I stay on this theme for a minute, I just see this in Messi. He knows what he's doing. He's not a big guy, but he knows who he was, and he figured that out early. And as years have gone by, he's just accumulated so many options and plays around his core competency, and he just is, you know, really unstoppable because he knows what his strengths are and doesn't really play outside of those skills. You know, I don't know if you notice that and see that in him, but I feel like that he figured out his identity a long time, and mm-hmm. So he just has so many options.
Yeah, he's got a lot of teammates around him that are good. Got to let you go. I wanted to take a minute to say thank you for really years of loyalty and coming on the shows with me from Sports Beat over here to ESPN Salt Lake City. I'm moving on. It's the last time we'll do this together. I'm going to Rio, and then I'll be moving to Madrid with the Olympic Channel coming up in the fall. And I know we'll be continuing our relationship on a satellite or on a Skype or in some way. But I just wanted to thank you for, again, many years of belief and giving us your time. So thank you.
Thanks, Tom. Appreciate it. Yeah, good luck over there. I think that's a fantastic opportunity, and I know you're going to kill it over there. So thanks, Mike.